Bankruptcy is a federal use, and so it doesn't apply to the cannabis industry. Our sister company, Cannabis Collects, they have seen an uptick in receivership that's being implemented a little bit more recently. That being said, when you enter into receivership, you're generally getting paid out if you are a secured creditor, which starts with banks and things like that, and they'll go through the liquidation of assets. And typically, they are not seeing unsecured creditors generally getting funds at the end of the day.
Welcome to How to Flourish in Cannabis. I'm your host, Brian Weber. How to Flourish in Cannabis is a bi-weekly educational-focused show with experienced leaders in regulated cannabis. Our guests have a wide range of industry experience in law, insurance, real estate, and today, cannabis trade credits. Our guests are asked to give general educational knowledge in a subject matter that they're experts in. No pitches here. This is designed to be a masterclass in regulated cannabis. Many operators fail for lack of proper education and guidance in operating a highly regulated, capital-intensive business. How to Flourish in Cannabis is our effort to elevate and educate. Today is a really interesting show. Show's topic today is extending credit terms in cannabis, five things to protect your cash flow, and I have a really special guest on today. Adam Kavanaugh holds the position of president at the Cannabis Credit Association, where he is at the forefront of instilling accountability and transparency within the industry, particularly concerning trade credits. With more than 6 years of experience in the cannabis sector, Adam embarked on his journey as the inaugural general manager at Leafly. His tenure at Leafly was marked by versatile roles, contributing to the launch of markets such as Massachusetts, the strategic acquisition of hemp-derived products for Leafly's e-commerce platform, collaboration with both prominent and emerging retailers, and brands on advertising and marketing initiatives and revenue-generating strategies. Adam, it's great to have you here today. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Brian.
Yeah. I love to have really experienced people in this industry. And trade credit, it's been a problem in this industry for a bit, but there's not a ton of people who are really focused on solving this. So, you know, at Flourish, we serve a lot of brands and we hear a lot of issues on this. And, you know, we're actually a member of the Cannabis Credit Association, proud member. But I really wanted to have you on today just to like generally just talk about the problem. What is going on with cannabis trade credit? Why is this such an issue? Do you mind giving us a bit of an overview?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely a problem. And I would say it's reaching epidemic levels in certain markets. It largely stems from, I think, a lot of factors, potentially a ton of retailers and a ton of brands buying for competition and shelf space. You know, it starts, I think, at the decision-making step of what retailers are choosing to put on their shelves initially and what kind of offers they're potentially also being given. And largely, the folks making those decisions, availability to data is scarce. And so from the get-go, there's a lot of decisions being made without a lot of information. That in turn leads to, you know, downstream problems, right? And so you've brought in all this product, and now what do you do with it? At the end of the day, you know, a lot of these stores have to resort to discounting and things of that nature. You know, there's no real liquidation market in this space. So the only way to move product is to BOGO everything and get it to move. So, and then there's, you know, disputes over quality and things of that nature. And so there's a lot of things happening at the transactional level. In return, you know, a lot of folks are making decisions, hey, because we had to reduce this, our margin is impacted, and our store wasn't necessarily where we would like to have it originally because of regulations. You know, we can't just have a 100 walk score and be on the corner of a predominant intersection potentially with a ton of foot traffic. So there's a lot of different issues that lead to this. And ultimately, there are not a lot of protections in place for people who are lending out goods and services in this industry. And people make the comparison to the liquor industry all the time for this industry. Well, in the liquor industry today, if you were to go and stiff someone, there's regulations in place. There are agencies and things of that nature. And you do that to one person and automatically you're put on a COD list. And until you pay off your creditors, you are working with COD for everybody, or potentially not working with anybody at all. And those are things that have happened over years of, you know, tried and true grit and determination for these niche industries to develop practices to be a bit more discerning and weed out some of these bad actors. And we just don't have that in place.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that are affecting all of this. It's dispensaries maybe overbuying or buying things that they don't need, the value of that getting put down. You know, obviously brands, you know, offering trade credit, you know, 30, 60, 90 day terms is nothing new, you know, in wholesale sales to retailers. But, you know, lack of protections for brands and for retailers, you know, related toward this, and just a very high complex, high cost, highly regulated industry to get in. All of these factors beyond just what is normal, you know, like in normal environments, like in a, you know, in a retail and alc bev sales industry, that is a traditional, well-established business model here. Some of those things, some of those protections are not there for the cannabis industry for that nature. So I know we have a few talking points, you know, to kind of go over things today. So let's talk about these from both the brand perspective, the manufacturer perspective, and also the dispensary perspective, kind of starting first of the law. You know, is a traditional, like, what resources are available for cannabis operators or cannabis brands, you know, in terms of the law, kind of more being a reactive approach of if you are, you know, you have extended terms and you're not getting paid, or you have received terms and you have, you know, the inability to pay on this and you want to negotiate with, you know, with the manufacturer that you purchase from. What does the law say? What resources are available for the law?
Yeah. So legally speaking, you know, there isn't, bankruptcy is a federal use. And so it doesn't apply to the cannabis industry. We have seen at our sister company, Cannabis Collects, they have seen an uptick in receivership being something that's being implemented a little bit more recently. That being said, when you enter into receivership, you're generally getting paid out if you are a secured creditor, which starts with banks and things like that, and they'll go through the liquidation of assets. And typically, they are not seeing unsecured creditors generally getting funds at the end of the day. So outside of that, and that's more of, I guess, like a state-based kind of bankruptcy process. But then it's taking it to civil court. And so, you know, we're talking lawsuits, but there's no debtor jail. You know, Jean Valjean is not a reality today where you could end up doing something like that. So yeah, there's no debtor's jail or prison. There's really nothing outside of that sort of civil lawsuit filing, which we are seeing a lot more of, especially in certain states.
And it's time consuming, it's expensive, and it's also reactionary too, which is probably the worst way to solve a problem. I know we want to talk here today about some proactionary things that you can do, either as a brand or also as a, you know, as a responsible, you know, dispensary in working with brands to be able to purchase things in a smart way. So probably not new advice for any of these things, whether it's cannabis or not, but like, I know the first one we wanted to talk about is kind of the most obvious one of like, get it in writing, what your terms are, what your expectations are, and what else happens if it fails. Can you go into some like, you know, like some things that you guys have seen rather successful in that terms, or some of the things that might not be worth the time to put on paper?
Yeah, for sure. One thing we definitely recommend is, you know, getting people to fill out a credit application. Ideally, in that process, you know, they're providing references. You're trying to get some information as to whether or not they're paying their bills on time. So that's, you know, whether or not they put their brother-in-law on there as a reference is another story, but you know, at least you're getting something. And then in that credit application process, writing in language which is easily Googleable to say, you know, in the event that you're unsuccessful in paying us back, any collections fees, attorney fees, things of that nature, you know, will be paid for. And that provides some additional, you know, coverage in the event that things do sour down the road. You know, you're not out additional money. That could be a huge win. Personal guarantees and things of that nature. If outside of, I guess, more so the dispensary brand relationship, we see those more so on contractual type of contracts, as opposed to transactional, which is more of the dispensary in brand relationship. So personal guarantee letters are you know, a great thing for any kind of contractual contract that is or relationship that's starting. And generally, though, those tend to clog up the transactional type of relationship because
it puts friction on there.
There's a lot of friction, right? Sales is trying to move product.
Really small print on the back of the PO, potentially.
Yeah, something like that. So yeah, anything that you can do to just try and get better line of sight as you're entering into these relationships and put some guardrails onto the foundational aspects can be extremely helpful.
With the collections agency work that you guys are a part of as well, is there anything else that's been like really fruitful in helping get ahead of some of those issues beyond just like some of that legalese that's related to that, or collections fees, or potentially interest rates for past due, you know, invoices?
Communication's key, obviously. If the relationship does start to go awry, you know, and that goes for probably the person owing the money too, absolutely, and trying to stay in contact and show that you're trying to make payments, right? Like, let's not get to the point where you're doing nothing and answering no emails and no questions. I think the large majority of relationships could be salvaged by simply saying, hey, here's what we can do today in form of a down payment or a payment plan. And I think most people would be potentially amenable to that because it's a step in the right direction and it's not a complete souring of the relationship.
Yeah, that was another item on our hit list of just communicate. You know, we're all business owners here. You know, we all know that things can happen. We're trying to get in there, but like, you're not going to solve anything without communicating about it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, going back to your original question about, you know, getting things in writing, you know, obviously when it comes to terms, there's a lot that we can do to protect yourself up front. You know, make sure you're doing due diligence. And obviously we have a service that provides people the opportunity to do that. But, you know, there's other things where it's, you know, again, checking with other companies that potentially do business with them, getting other references can be super key.
Super easy. So is this a small community? Talk to other brands, talk to, you know, maybe some of your competitors, talk to other retailers. Everybody wants to work with good people in this industry. And I know the lip service has a way of figuring those things out on here. And we'll get to some alternatives on there where you can find some of this information out. So we got get it in writing. And we did definitely talk on communication as well. Just being very vocal and, you know, setting expectations up front is a great way of getting ahead of these issues. And if there are issues, communicate with them and talk about them. Like any new cannabis customer, I know every dispensary I've gone to and usually ask for good advice that they give to newer consumers is start low and go slow. And I think that is a validated one here. You know, brand salespeople have, you know, the mission to really get their product out there and sell as much as possible, which is a noble mission. But if you extend too much credit and too much terms and put too much product out there, especially with one retailer, you know, you have your single source risk right there. So, you know, I know we talked about this ahead of the time, but like focusing on quantity is another thing I think you had recommended before our call here.
You know, forming good relationships, right, is fantastic, and making sure that those relationships are set up for success. And on both sides, you know, from the retailer side, just say no is a great also alternative to start low, go slow. It's don't take on the product that you know isn't going to move. Don't say yes to the person giving you a brown bag of money to get the product on the shelf or some other incentives. And brands, you know, potentially don't do that as well, because you're not giving your product to someone on the merit that it's actually going to move and form a long-term viable relationship. And I think companies can protect themselves too in this realm by structuring, you know, incentives for their salespeople from a commission standpoint to build longer-term relationships, as opposed to, you know, individual sales units, you know, evaluate this over, you know, several months as opposed to first sale or things like that. And conversely, you know, on the retailer side, make sure that, you know, and if they're doing multiple roles, they're in lockstep with the merchandising manager, the marketing team, so that everybody knows what product they're bringing in purposefully and have a way to move it in a way that's going to yield profits and ultimately be able to pay back the people who gave you the product in the first place. And so doing things like that are fantastic. And then, you know, what you can largely do is ask people to limit the amount of credit that you're going to extend. You know, put a hard cap on any new relationships and say, hey, you know, it's COD beyond anything over $1,000, or it's COD for the first, you know, initial couple of buys until you can prove yourself as a good, you know, mover of our goods. And, or if we are going to extend terms, we're going to hard cap it at, you know, a couple thousand dollars until, you know, the first 3 months of our relationship are cemented, or for 6 months, and then take it from there. And I think it's less about, you know, some of the specifics around net 15, net 30, net 90. It's just putting those protections in place to say, like you said, start low, go slow, set some limits, figure out if the relationship is going to be, you know, viable for the long term, as opposed to a flash in the pan type of thing that ultimately never bodes well.
Terms was definitely on our list of things of like, focus on, you know, like what you said, credit limits for customers. That's just not free for all. And also different terms. You know, I know that you had touched upon one thing that really makes a lot of sense here is like, as a brand, you can only pay out commission actually if you receive money, you know, from those sales, and aligning your salespeople on, you know, that's part of when you want to have a push to get your brand into different retailers. You know, I know it's a struggle there because everyone needs to make money on this one, but you only get paid if we get paid. And that's a really salient point to have to remember and make sure that those you're incentivized properly with those terms as well. So, you know, we were going over a few other items on here, like before you guys started the Cannabis Credit Association, like, you had noted to me in one of our pre-calls of like, people are going on the Reddit and Facebook groups to be able to like, who's paying their bills on time, who's not. I found that like really fascinating. But like, as with everything, one, could be libel issues. You know, obviously posting anonymous is not much of an issue on there. And that's also not up-to-date information. If someone gets called out, those things could be resolved, but you could still have your name tarnished, you know, on there. And especially if it was an honest dispute, quality, timing, whatever else that's on there. So I thought that was really interesting that they had those on there. I'm assuming those are quite regional. You also had mentioned that there was a regional group in California that had done something similar to this, but, you know, for Cannabis Credit, you guys expanded to that to a more of a national scale as well.
Correct. Yeah. I think, you know, what we were seeing largely prior to starting this, and as we've started doing this and explored some of these groups, is there's you know, there were a lot of people not getting paid. There were a lot of very upset people. Some of the things getting posted were potentially word of mouth types of things. Oh, I heard this, or I heard that. And that's the interest, you know, moderation. You know, I've learned from looking into forums that exist in other industries where they have these, you know, credit associations and credit groups, they'll fly people down to a hotel room in, you know, a certain part of the country, and they'll meet there for 2 days, and they'll have a lawyer present. And there are very strict rules on what you can say and not say to make sure that you're protected from a, you know, a fair trade perspective and a liability perspective. And what we're seeing in some of these groups is the wild, wild west, you know, where people are slanging accusations left and right. There's a lot of talk about this person and that person, and moderation is slim at best, if anything. And we really feel that, hey, as an operator, absolutely, you should be able to surface this kind of stuff in a community, in a forum, but do it safely. And make sure that, you know, you're protected, your business is protected.
More of a formal channel doing this. As legacy becomes more regulated, there's a, you know, legacy way of handling things and kind of more of a, you know, regulated and proper way of handling things, as especially as lawyers and stuff get involved. They want to see things go through proper channels. So, and it's just, you know, it protects good operators, you know, both on the buy and the sell side, to get relevant, up-to-date information, and also have a, you know, a method for, you know, working through these disputes in an organized fashion, you know, with some moderation there. You know, I know the more comparable features on this for mainstream industries would be like more of a Dun & Bradstreet or a Better Business Bureau, to be able to have these lists out there, or these reconciliation items out there. And there's also some other, you know, like, this is a topic for another show, But there are some companies out there that are offering invoice factoring on both the buy side and the sell side. Whether you're going to get a dispensary to agree to those is, you know, potentially a different story. When you have other brands that are offering no interest credit or whatever else, but those are other avenues I've seen come up to be able to address, you know, some of this issues like Lendica or Funcana. And I think LeafLink had some invoice factoring as part of their platform as well for a bit. So there's a bit of a proactive nature on this one. There's a lot of reactive natures that we're dealing with. And, you know, I'm glad that solutions, you know, we try to educate on this show and not focus on any one particular company per se, but like, you're the only one who I know who is doing this in the cannabis industry right now. And I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing some great advice on one, how to get ahead of these problems. And two, you know, I know we talked about this at the beginning, there's not really much legal resource or recourse for brands and dispensaries that are going through this. So setting up new channels, doing some self-regulation for us within this industry, I think is a very valiant effort. And I really appreciate your efforts to be able to bring some sense of normalcy and fairness and supporting good operators within this industry. So thanks for all the work that you're doing, Adam. And thanks for coming on today. If anybody's watching today, and you guys have questions for Adam or questions about brands and trade credit, give this video a like, shoot some stuff in the comments. It really helps. I'd love to have Adam back on talk about this. But Adam, if they want to reach out to you direct, what is the best way for people to get in contact with you?
Yeah, they can go and check out cannabiscredit.com. That's cannabis with a Z. We're welcoming members to our association all the time. And essentially helping those members get better line of sight into the people they're potentially doing business with, having the ability to monitor their current partners and ultimately form a community where people are, you know, sharing information and trying to bring accountability and transparency to the space. Because like you said, you know, you go to run a D&B report on some of these companies, you're largely firing blanks. And so ultimate goal for us is to be able to tie numbers to these companies' names to simply improve on-time bill pay performance in the industry. So they can reach me at adam@cannabiscredit.com as well. Always down to chat, show people the platform. Our membership base is open to anybody throughout the industry, whether you're a licensed provider or an ancillary service provider. And we have a very eclectic membership base that is just that, you know, laboratories, distributors, brands, marketing firms, POSs, ERPs, you name it. Everybody can come to the table as long as they want to help elevate the industry. They're down to share some data and they could utilize our data to be, you know, better business operators. And so a lot of different ways to get in contact with us, but happy to share what we can.
And I'd highly recommend you check out the first smoke of the day show with I believe the brand that was on there was Maven that was talking about using your services, and they gave a little bit of a demo as well. So I thought that was really interesting. So Adam, thanks for being on today. I super appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Brian.